Drive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app, now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Gareth Wheeler, live from Columbus. Wheels is going to have the call tonight on TSN Radio. Columbus TFC, leg one of the Eastern Final. Watch it on TSN. Bobby Mack in studio. The esteemed Bob McKenzie in studio.
Oh, yeah.
And the plunger is in here with him, or it will be in here with him at 6:20. I'll bet you he's never done an interview with a plunger within 10 feet. Are you going to stick that on your head? Is that the plan, or were you just joking about
it
that?
Doesn't, like...
You're going to do, like, the Ace Ventura?
Do you think you could get that suction to your head?
I tried already.
You have doesn't to, do it. You have to wet it. Either way, it's not good. Wasn't it when...
It's not working.
Finkel and Einhorn, remember, didn't he start doing that over his yap?
Yeah, I can't.
Ace Ventura?
I can't remember the exact details, but there was a plunger joke somewhere in there.
Somewhere involved.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I think that's what it was,
your
actually.
Gun is digging into my hip.
Yes.
All of that.
I believe it was still Einhorn at that point. I don't think Ace had figured out that it was potentially Ray Finkel.
Exactly.
Anyway,
it wasn't good.
No, it wasn't good. So we've got the plunger in studio. We got a big soccer match tonight. Mm-hmm. Leafs are coming off a disappointing loss. They had won six in a row.
You didn't call it like it was embarrassing, but not embarrassing. Like, is that like
it wasn't like
it's a bad loss?
Yeah, I mean, my impression is, as I said yesterday, anything short of their goalie putting on just a miracle performance,
right,
is a bad loss. Mm-hmm. There's no other way to dance around it. It happens. Every team every year has 5 to 7 bad losses.
Yep.
The best teams in the league, they're still going to have 5 to 7 bad losses. But if you lose to the worst team in the league at home, and their goalie just plays an average game, and I thought Ranta played well, but like he didn't make 55 stops.
No, he made one really nice redirection save, I think, early in the third.
It was just an off night all around.
Yeah,
they didn't.
It was a bad game.
It's not
it was
like
an
they
ugly
had
28 game.
And scoring chances.
No, they didn't. No. Like remember last year, Colorado beat them 2-1.
Yeah, and Varlamov was.
He made like 53 saves.
Was gross.
That's the kind of game you walk out of that building and you say, "Well, it happens. What do you want me to do?
Play like that, you're fine.
No one's going to complain about that, and no one is going to freak out from one loss.
No,
I'm not suggesting people are losing their minds in Toronto because again, they had won six in a row.
Yep.
And looking back on it, hindsight being 20/20, I guess it was a trap game in the end. They were coming off an emotional roller coaster win a couple of nights before Montreal. Arizona starting to feel better about themselves.
Yep.
Credit to Arizona. You know, they rolled through Eastern Canada, swept Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, and that's a team that has been goofed on a lot over the past month and a half.
Correct.
I've been leading that parade. You know, I've been goofing on them, and they stepped in, and they shut me up, and they shut up people in Ottawa and Montreal, so good for them.
Yeah.
But
they had a nice little trip.
They had a nice trip. But you can't lose that game. You can't. You can't lose at home against the worst team in the league. You can't. But the beauty of the NHL is you get back on track tomorrow night in Florida against another team that's underachieving.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the theme of this afternoon's conversations. We keep coming back to the tire fires. It's like a moth just attracted
the
light,
yeah,
you know, to the flame, because Edmonton's a tire fire, they're playing tonight. Montreal's a tire fire, they're playing tonight.
Yeah.
Buffalo's a tire fire. Florida's a tire fire. Arizona's a mess.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of teams.
I told you, there's 5 or 6 that you think could possibly win the Stanley Cup, and the rest are literally just in existence.
Well, Bobby Mack said it the other day, though.
Like, not fighting for playoffs, just in existence.
But Bobby Mack said he went through the standings, and there was a couple at the top, but it, like 80% of the league was all lumped together with it between 5 and 6 points. That's why, I mean, you look at how awful Montreal and Edmonton have been. They were like 5-6 points out of a wild card spot. They got to jump 10 teams.
But that's the thing. Like, we were talking about this before we started. Anaheim has won 3 in a row now.
Yeah.
Getzlaff's out. Kessler's been out all year. They've had a lot of injury problems.
Yeah.
And
they're in a wild card spot.
They're in a wild card spot. So if you're Edmonton, it's one thing to look at the Pacific and say, well, Vegas is going to come back to earth.
Right.
Okay. Why do you think you're taking that spot? Because when Getzlaff returns and Kessler returns, Anaheim, I think, is going to have a great second half and be right where they always are.
Edmonton's got 16 points. Do you see them making the playoffs?
as of right now, with each passing day, I have a more difficult time picturing that. They're closer to Arizona than they are Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
They're closer to Arizona than any other team.
And if there's no McDavid, you wouldn't even think twice about it.
Oh, of course not. You take him out and put just your average player in there, you look at them and you're like, they are not making the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, and that's the reality of what they're dealing with right now. But, you know, Noodles, you keep talking about Cam Talbot. If he can get hot,
Cam Talbot hasn't played well. But I keep coming back to it because I just, every night I'm fascinated looking at the standings. And because it has been, there has been so much parity. But you look at the bottom of the standings, and there's been one consistency. Arizona hasn't been good. Well, yeah, if you believe that Rant is their number one, which he is, and proven it, he's just coming back off of injury. Robin Leonard hasn't been very good in Buffalo. Roberto Luongo, injured. Florida's right at the bottom. Cam Talbot, not very good to start the season. Edmonton's right there. Montreal, Carey Price, not good and injured. Philadelphia, Brian Elliott, what's going on there? Are you trying to settle in? Like, yeah, Boston's the team right above. Tuukka Rask hasn't had a great start. That's 7-8 teams that are in the bottom. And then conversely, you look at the top of the standings. Tampa Bay's had excellent goaltending. They're a great team, though, but the goaltender's been good. Jake Allen has stabilized. Toronto's right there. We see what Freddie Anderson's been doing. I thought he looked sharp last night. He made a couple of good
saves. I
thought
he was fine. I didn't think he got challenged that much.
No.
I mean, but he did what he had to.
Winnipeg lost. They lost. They didn't look very good last night, but Hellebuck's been very sharp.
Mm-hmm.
New Jersey's right there. Corey Schneider.
Yeah.
Goaltender's
playing
well.
No, it's the most important position in the league.
It is, and that's not taking away from the way teams are constructed. It just, it's at an all-time high for me how important just good or poor goaltending. If you get average goaltending, you're right in the middle with all those other
teams.
You're
absolutely in it.
But you get great goaltending, you're right at the top. You get poor goaltending, you're right at the bottom.
Well, you can go back to Edmonton with that and Talbot. You say he's got to play better, but is what he had to do last year, is that too much to expect? Maybe the team wasn't that... How much? What are the average shots per game or quality chances?
He was right there, but he played 73 games.
He had more starts, more minutes than any other
than anybody. He played 73 games last year, so I think they were just saying... All right, we'll roll him out for another. They've got Laurent Brossoit. He
ain't gonna.
He's a backup.
But he needs to take minutes off of Talbot. Your backup. We just talked about it. Curtis McIlhenny. He's going to play this week.
Mm-hmm. He'll play either Friday or Saturday.
You need 500 goaltending from your goalie. McIlhenny right now is 2-1. So if he loses this weekend, I know everyone, and it's how you lose and all that. But everyone will be like, well, there's. You know, they got two guys in the minors that are playing well. They're going to be nipping at his heels. He needs to be 500 or better and let Freddie have a night off. But I look at, you know, Toronto's, they've been quite stable in pretty much every position, even though, I saw the stat last night. They've been outshot in seven games straight, even though they're 6-1.
6-1. But, and a lot of that has been close.
Right.
You know, and there's been more emphasis.
It's not like 50 to 20.
No, last night it was like 32-29. Yeah. And there's more of an emphasis in today's game on shot attempts.
Yeah, and quality.
5-on-5 and quality chances. And I don't have all those stats in front of me, but I'd be hard pressed to suggest that they're 0-7 in both of those categories.
No.
I think they probably perform pretty well in terms of shot attempts and scoring opportunities. And. Listen, they're in a good spot. They're in a very good spot, regardless of what happened last night.
And I look at those middle tier teams. For example, Washington really hasn't. They lost a lot in the offseason. We talked about it yesterday. I don't think Washington is this juggernaut like they were the last couple of years, but let's see what they do in the playoffs. Like, Holtby has been really inconsistent. Ovi Backstrom hasn't been nearly playing as good as he has. Chicago's been a team that's been hot and cold.
Well, there's going to be turnover still. I mean, there's too many teams that are too close together to lock in what we see today and suggest that is what we're going to see in the middle of April.
Right.
There are going to be still a couple of teams that are on the outside looking in that will find a way to get in. But conversely, there are going to be a few teams every single year that you think are locks that don't get in. And maybe Washington, this is a year where just for whatever reason, they don't ever get it on the rails. Maybe Edmonton just doesn't get it going. Montreal doesn't get it going. There's three teams where a lot of people have them penciled in
and
not going to make it.
And conversely, does Vegas maybe not drop off? Or does New Jersey? Like, New Jersey doesn't look to me.
I believe more in Jersey, but Vegas, again, they kind of felt like they were starting to sputter a little bit. They went into Edmonton and got spanked.
Back on track.
They've won two in a row.
And yeah. Fleury's not even in the net.
No. There's still Malcolm Subban just returned.
And that's the funny thing, is Malcolm Subban hasn't proven to be an NHL goalie.
How bad is his concussion? I've never...
Marc-Andre Fleury?
Yeah, Fleury's? He's been out for, what, like...
Months.
Yeah, he was the first five games he left, I think.
And he's had multiple concussions now. I think that's... In recent memory, I think that's three that I can remember. This would be the third one.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah.
By that time, obviously, you're not going to rush him back anyway, even if it's your first concussion, but... Right. I can't imagine they have any idea when he's returning. TSN 1050 soccer coverage for the road to the MLS Cup. That means the MLS playoffs continue with TFC facing rival Columbus tonight. First leg of the Eastern Conference Championship. 7:30 kickoff on TSN and right here on TSN 1050. And our main man, Gareth Wheeler, is down there in Columbus. He's in the booth. He's calling a game tonight. And I'm pretty sure he's throwing out guaranteed win night. I think it's guaranteed win night.
Really?
Courtesy of Wheels. Is that a fact or is that fiction? Guaranteed win for TFC tonight.
I'm feeling it's guaranteed win night. They better win. James Duthie is in the building tonight, guys.
Star power.
If they're sending James Duthie to Columbus, it has to be a big deal.
I'm with you, man. Although Duthie's one of those guys, like he'll do anything. He'll go anywhere, much music awards, the social he'll host from time to time. He's calling games for different... You know, big events. But if he's in Columbus, you're right. I mean, that means the superstar himself is in the house. And the big story for TFC clearly is who they're missing tonight in Jovinko and Jose Altidore. But you pointed this out a lot over the past couple of weeks, that those guys weren't playing in Columbus back in May, I believe it was. And they still won that game 5-0. So why should Columbus feel like it's going to be any different tonight?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a bunch of variables that provide a little bit of an unknown for tonight. Like, 16 days off is absolutely ridiculous. Like, you can fit in Olympic games in between now and when Toronto FC played last. So I want to see how both teams come out tonight. But you're right, Hayes. This team, and there's been four games this season when Jovinko and Altidore, both players have been unavailable. TFC scored 13 goals in those four games, have not been held off in the held scoreless in a game. So they're averaging 3.25 goals per game in games that they don't play, including that aforementioned 5-0 victory. So look, Toronto FC, it sounds cliche, but they have the most depth in the league. They have the ability to play in different ways. And if there was a benefit to having that time off, it's the fact that the team got to go back to the drawing board a little bit and figure out how exactly they want to execute and where they want to come from in terms of their plan of attack tonight. So they're ready to go. It's just a matter of execution now. And really, even on paper, even without Altidore Jovinko, I still think TFC is the superior team.
Well, from Columbus's standpoint, I mean, who's dangerous? Who should we be circling tonight and hoping they don't have themselves a night?
There's this little Argentine player named Federico Higuain. His brother's Gonzalo, played for Real Madrid and Argentina International, like a very, very good player, but Federico's dominated MLS for years on end. He's just a creative influence, pulls all the strings in the middle of the park. He's just crafty and kind of goes where he wants to go. So he's more of an attacking midfielder, but then he drops deep. So it's going to be up to a player like Michael Bradley not to kind of take the bait, just to hold back, be patient, and have other players kind of tuck in and watch a player like that. Other than that, on this team, they have a couple goal scorers down the left-hand side, but they lack star power, but they've really come together as a team. Before they lost the second leg to New York, they were on a 12-match unbeaten streak and were the hottest team in MLS. So Toronto FC is facing a team that's on really good form right now, but it's more of a collective than an individual that really the quality comes from when it comes to the crew.
TFC Columbus tonight, kickoff at 7:30 right here on TSN 1050. You can watch it on TSN.
Isn't that a weird game timing? Like, you're taking 2 weeks off and then you fire up on a Tuesday night?
It's so ridiculous, O-Dog. Like, it makes zero sense whatsoever.
Like, how about a Sunday or a Saturday? I don't know.
But will it change the attitude of the fans as far as tailgating and getting after it?
See, that's the thing. That this stadium is just on the outskirts of the stadium, and we pulled up about an hour ago, and there was plenty of people just firing up grills and tailgating out front. So it's kind of like that NFL greasy atmosphere a little bit. But I'll tell you this, O-Dog, like, for a Tuesday night, it's so brutal they're playing now. There's over 1,000 Toronto FC supporters who made the trip down here, and a lot of them are just being parked at a bar kind of 5-10 minutes away from here all afternoon. They've been crushing it, and they're going to be marching to the game all together. So it's going to be a scene. It's going to be an atmosphere. This place is going to be sold out, which is a good change because I don't know if you guys have heard this, but the owner of the team wants to move the team to Austin, Texas. It's kind of like a la Major League, where the crusty owner wants to move the team to a better climate, a better city. And so there's this whole Save the Crew moment. Some local beer companies have become involved. The fans are pissed off. So there's a little bit of that element, us against them, in favor of the Crew tonight. But it should be a great atmosphere. It's going to translate on radio. It's going to translate on TV. But you're absolutely right. Like, the MLS season shouldn't go this late. Like, it should wrap up first week of November, end of story. But there was those World Cup qualifiers that throw things off. And for whatever reason, they can't figure out a way to end the season on a proper time. So it's ridiculous to me. I agree with you. But good on Toronto sports fans for making the trip down here to Columbus.
That Major League element terrifies me, man. Like, that scares me, dude. If, like, if their manager's pulling a Lou Brown and they've got the board cut out of the owner and they're taking strips off after every victory, I mean, I would be bracing for maybe disappointment tonight. But I get the impression, like, from TFC standpoint, obviously you'd like to win, score as many goals on the road as you can. But with it being a two-legged event, essentially, in aggregate, if they can walk out with a draw, I think they'd be happy tonight, wouldn't they,
Wheels? Yeah, I think so. The away goals have been great for this team over the last two years in the last three series. They've scored an away goal in each one of those games, and they advanced based upon the away goals against New York. But just think about how crazy some of these playoff games have been. Like, the Montreal debacle, it was like a year ago today, where they painted the lines on the field incorrectly in front of like 60. Like, how embarrassing was that?
That was
what a
brutal
clown show.
I forgot about that.
But then the second leg, when they played in Toronto in the rain and extra time and went back and forth, it was so dramatic. Then last time out, the fight in the tunnel. Like, these games have been downright bizarre. So I think TFC's prepared for everything because they've seen just about everything. But, I mean, Owen and Noodles can kind of explain more from an athlete's perspective whether those outside influences, like the whole Save the Crew thing, would, like, motivate them, the players. Like, I don't know how much of a role that will actually play.
Well, I was in Hartford, and they were trying to move out of there, and nobody really cared. Like, just get us out of here.
Austin's right. An upgrade on Columbus, too. Austin's a great town.
They've got some grills down
there. Boys, like, it looks like great an expansion team will be coming to Nashville next year. And then if they move to Austin, it's like, this is like the A-plus tour. Like, yeah, that swing, Austin and Nashville will just be dynamite.
Party Central. TFC Columbus tonight on TSN 1050 and on TSN. Enjoy it, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work.
There he is, Gareth Wheeler. He'll have the call again on TSN 1050 tonight. Kickoff 7:30 on a Tuesday night.
Did you hear the pep in that voice?
He is fired up.
He is horny right now.
He loves a football match. Football. It's not soccer to Wheels. It's football. It's football. Footy. It's footy. Bob McKenzie in studio. Shea Weber coming to Toronto. Oliver Ekman-Larsson coming to Toronto. Who else?
Eric Carlson.
Doughty.
Those are all the D that could be potentially available within the next 6 to 16 months.
We'll get Bob to confirm or deny. In studio next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVRs. If you can't watch it live, you can watch it later. Find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca, and subscribe and check us out on iTunes. Brian Hasey, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, our best bets brought to you by Proline later in the hour. We got the plunger in here. We got Bob McKenzie. What's happening, Bob?
Not much, just looking at O with his plunger.
You ever thought you'd do an interview in studio with a plunger?
Sitting on the desk.
Brand new. Yeah, I've thought about it.
Just knowing all.
We're going to bring that down to Studio 6 in the next broadcast.
You guys should.
In case it's required in show.
Right. Plant it during the quiz. Pull the plunger out. Anyway, we've been talking about that Leaf game last night, and everyone's got a different take on goaltender interference and the interpretation. I think if it's 50-50, they should count the goal, personally. I hate the review process. I know you know that. I've said that many times. But what does the league want to happen?
I think the league's happy with the call that was made. I was kind of leaning towards it not being a goal, simply because I don't know that he was so far in the net, and then he's got to try and push himself out.
Yeah.
And never really get out to where he wants to be. That's my take on it. But I can understand why, if you're a Leaf fan, you're frustrated and you're thinking it happened so long afterwards. But there was clearly interference on the play. The question is, at what point, what's the statute of limitations
on
interference?
Yeah.
But in that case, I mean, he had nowhere to, and Jamie would know this better than me, but he was deep in the net and there was nothing to push off of. Right. If you're not deep in the net, you've got the post, you can get your skate down, but he was doing the, like the baby walking on the knees thing, trying to get back out.
Yeah.
And not quick enough. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about it with Ray, because you think the league would ever get to a point where they would at least entertain, maybe started in the AHL, kind of the international rules of the crease just being off limits, where it makes it more cut and dry?
Yeah, because in that instance, internationally, you would have blown the whistle.
Yeah.
Like as soon as Hyman went into the crease and made as much contact with the goaltender as he made, they would simply blow the whistle and say, crease infraction. I don't know. I think North Americans might get frustrated every time somebody plants themselves in the blue paint, the whistle goes, because that's effectively what the referees internationally are supposed to watch for.
Right.
If they see a guy plant himself in the blue, as soon as they see him in the blue, it's like, blow the whistle no matter what's going on. Mm-hmm. And face off. So I don't know. But, it's more cut and dried. There's no question. But it might be more cut and dried so far the other way that people will be frustrated by it. But there might be less controversy because you're heading off. The whistle gets blown internationally for a guy in the crease, not when the goal is scored, but when the guy goes in the crease.
Exactly.
So but there may be some frustration on the part of multiple whistles for guys going in. And, or maybe the players, like slashing and like face-off violations, would just get conditioned to the fact, I can't go set up in the blue. I got to stand outside the blue. And if I don't, I might risk the whistle going when we're in the offensive zone. So I don't have a problem with the international rule. I just wonder if people would be more hypersensitive about it.
Well, in the league for that matter, too. I mean, they kind of like their own rules and avoiding the international rules. It kind of seems that way anyway. And in a lot of ways, I agree with them. I don't want to see a European game in the NHL.
I'm terrified, and I've said this before, because of instant replay, because of some of the rule changes or adaptations as far as face-offs or slashing and stuff, that it really has an impact deep into the playoffs. I mean, I know it's such an outlier, but the Brett Hull, the skate lace and the toe in the crease and a lot of these
things.
Right,
but that's kind of what we got now.
You're
like,
right.
That's what we've got now.
Right.
And, I mean, the way we're calling goalie interference and the challenges being used, you do run the risk of an overtime, the worst case scenario, overtime of game 7.
I just said, like, if that play happens last night, we're all right with it happening November 20th on a Monday night against Arizona. But where this team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, believes they're heading, and the fan base believes where they're heading as well.
Spicy meatball.
I'd rather deal with it November 20th than
But luck of the draw.
Yeah.
You're right.
Rule's the rule.
And it can't go both ways, right? It can't be a situation where the Leafs get scored on in overtime and all of a sudden it comes back.
You're right.
So in the end, it all evens out.
It does.
That's why I don't like the review process, because I think in the end, everything does even out.
But,
so why waste the time?
Although if you didn't have the review process and it's an obvious one and it falls through the cracks,
controversy.
Both referees miss a blatant goalie interference call that a video review would automatically, because you can have the same thing happen in overtime of game 7. Blatant interference on the goaltender and nothing gets called and there's no video review process and the Stanley Cup is won and the fans go ballistic and people say, well, too bad. If we had video review, you could do this.
I will say one thing. I don't think they're consistent, because it's, you watch enough games, you're like, you see one, we're like, that's got to be goalie interference. And they say no. And then that one, You just see a bunch of different things happening. It's not consistent.
That's
because for the same reason every game that's officiated, there's no consistency in officiating because every referee's different. Every referee's got their own idea of what the standard should be. And that ultimately, that's all video review is. Video review is just allowing a referee who makes a subjective decision in the first place to make a call to review his work, check his work. That's all it is. And he has the decision to either go, yeah, I like the call I made, or no, I don't like the call I made. But at the end of the day, it's still a human being deciding his interpretation of the rule.
But see, I don't get the impression like they even are making a first impression or a first decision, because they don't have to. They know the review is coming.
Well, a lot of times they do. In a lot of instances, they have to call a goal or no goal on the ice.
But it doesn't matter, though, Bob. Like, if they call like last night, they could have waved it off. The Leafs would have challenged. And right. So they would have got that review anyway. Call it a goal or call it off, it's getting challenged. It's either right. Arizona's going to challenge or Toronto's going to challenge.
But that part of it's important to the extent that the video either refutes what they've, you know, yeah, whatever the initial call on the ice is, that's the one that's the real one until video review comes in. Mm-hmm. And then when video review comes in, it either reaffirms but you now need evidence to overturn something. So the referee is saying, I have to see some pretty clear indication on this video that the call I made was wrong, or I'm not going to, why would I make myself look stupid and switch it? So it needs to be overwhelming on that front. So there does need to be an initial call on the ice that is going to stand absent a change of heart.
And that's where you were coming to, that it actually took some stones last night on a star player, on Austin Matthews, at home, on a potential game-tying goal late in the game.
Yeah. Would have been easy for him to say, no, actually, we're going to leave that one.
But
sorry, Rick Tocchet in Arizona.
But you're right. He reviewed his work. He didn't see. He probably initially didn't see Hyman on the back door. He's probably watching the
puck. It would be easy to miss.
Be easy to miss. But you see the overhead where the stick goes in.
Yeah, and pushes him deep into the net.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a goalie interference.
And I'm sure that the referees are probably. I know Garrett Rank, one of the referees. I call him up and ask him. But I'm guessing that they went through the exact same discussion that we just went through.
Yeah.
How long is long enough before the, you know, can that goalie scramble back in or was he in a position? And it's a highly, highly, highly subjective thing.
The more I think about it, actually, the more courageous move would have been calling it a goal and going and explaining it to Rick Tocchet. Get right in his face and be like, this is why. Because he might have Latrell Sprewell that ref last night. Like, just starts choking him out.
Tock has a...
He looks terrifying still.
He looks like he chews on cement.
Oh.
Like, he looks so gritty.
He's so tough.
But
so tough.
You go back and look at some of his...
Good Scarborough guy.
Oh, yeah.
Some of
deep
his
into
fights
Scarborough.
And stuff. Like, there was a Wendell Clark thing going around on Twitter recently.
Oh, yeah? Did you see that? Oh, my goodness.
Best was the first part of it where the goalie kind of nudged him and he just cross-checked
Sean
him right
Casey.
There.
Casey. Like, how many games is that right now and today? Like John Casey trying to take a little bit of space for himself, and Wendell's, like, not having
Bob
it.
Bob Brook.
Oh, he buried him. Like, Casey was down. Like, he wasn't getting up either.
No, you take a punch in the back of the head from Wendell Clark.
Anybody that hasn't seen that Wendell video that's kicking around on Twitter, my goodness. It really, that illustrates what playing in the, what the National Hockey League was like in the 1980s and early 90s.
Like the guy's down turtling and Wendell is pulling him
he's
up
just
and
one
laying
more,
a beating
just a little
him.
Extra for you.
Yeah. All right, let's clarify the Oliver Ekman-Larsson piece you put up, because Noodles and I interpreted this differently.
I thought you just poured cold water on a fire and said, it's
pretty
gone.
Much
go away.
So that's the interpretation that you want
but
out there. Okay.
I guess it would have been easy to ignore it and not write anything. But I think all I did, and again, it's interesting the reaction, how people perceive things. You know, some people are saying, oh, yeah, typical Toronto media trading and getting Ekman-Larsson to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, no, if you're to Noodle's point, Noodle's takeaway was that I said, no, it's the opposite of that. He's not coming to Toronto, and there hasn't been any discussion. But I also know how this market works, and I also... And so the genesis of it was I was on Landsberg's show on Wednesday morning, and Steve Simmons was on. And we were getting towards the end of the segment, and we were talking about the Coyotes and how bad they were. Because they at that point, I don't think they'd beaten Montreal for their first regulation win. And he said, I'll tell you what, if I were the Leafs, I'd go out and try to get Ekman Larson. I can't imagine he's going to want to re-sign in Arizona and
right.
You know, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I was basically dismissive of it. I said, I don't think the Leafs, in order to get Ekman Larson, you'd have to give up one of the big three. I don't believe the Leafs are interested in doing that. I don't think Arizona wants to get rid of Ekman Larson. I don't think Ekman Larson actually wants to leave Arizona, although, you know, the longer they're really bad, the longer there's uncertainty about the rink, you never know on that front. And I left it at that.
Tell you what, that guy had himself a game last night.
Did he ever? Now I get to the weekend, and Phoenix, Arizona's in town, and suddenly I get a call or two from some people in the game, and they're like, "Hey, I know you poured cold water all over Ekman Larson to Toronto earlier in the week. Might just want a second." Mm-hmm. Second,
that set
guess
my
that.
Takes off.
So, and I was like, ooh, it set me off too. Sunday right. morning, I'm like, oh, I wanted a quiet day today. I better get on the phone. So I worked hard and drilled down what I believe was a pretty solid refuting it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the piece was simply to say, listen, this is something Leaf fans talk a lot about. And we all fall into the trap of talking about it. But here are the reasons why I don't believe there's anything to it. That said, you know, you're better to cover your ass a little bit too, because things sometimes change. As of this visit to, and I knew that it might have legs over the course of the day on Monday with Arizona being in town. So I thought I'll do something I don't normally do, and that is write about something that's in my mind not happening. And the fact that I write about it when it's not happening, some people are like you, Brian, who say, well, Bob wouldn't be writing about it unless it was happening.
That's right.
And that's not true at all, okay. other than probably deep down in the recesses of my mind somewhere, I was thinking this way, if a month or two or three from now, mm-hmm. suddenly Ekman Larson happens to be available, which I don't think he will be, but let's say he happens to be available. Well, at least I kind of covered my ass.
Well, and that was my interpretation, was the fact that someone connected clearly spoke with you. I mean,
yeah, but it wasn't that connected.
Not Joe from the Bridge.
That's my point. Is it's not like, you know, we get tweets every day. Hey, I'm hearing. No, yeah. You're not hearing. There's no yeah. way you're hearing. You're not taking tweets from random people and digging into it. That's why I was like, okay, there might be something here.
But I just thought it was an interesting dynamic for something that's had some conversation. And to explain why I don't believe that it's happening.
Okay.
But, you know, why, you know, some people would want it to happen.
Well, and you can make that case certainly in Toronto. I mean, he's a very good player.
Absolutely.
That's a position that people are focused on, and they're a really good team.
I guess at the end of the day, what I felt like I needed to do was reinforce the fact that I don't believe the Toronto Maple Leafs have any inclination at this moment in time whatsoever to move a piece like Nylander or Marner for a big piece on defense.
Mm-hmm.
A, I don't think it's available, and B, I don't think they want to do it. And so until such time that someone like that is available, then for sure they're not doing it. And the Ekman Larson part of it probably needs reinforced again, that even though the Coyotes are off to this horrendous start, they still don't have it in their mind that this is something they want to do.
Well, we were talking earlier about the dumpster fires that are going, like, it seems like a lot of bad around the league.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Leafs were going to add a piece, wouldn't they try to just jump the gun and do it this year and say, why can't we be a part of that five or six? They already are a part of the five or six really mm-hmm. strong teams in the league. Why not try to add this year as opposed to waiting another year to see if these guys develop a little bit more?
Well, two things. Number one, because A, I don't think that type of defenseman that everybody envisions, like who would it be? What would it take for you to give
that
up?
That I don't know.
What defenseman could you possibly get for, let's use, and again, just to reinforce, I'm not saying they want to or they're going to, but let's use Nylander as an example, or Marner, take your pick. One of the two of the big three, because we know Matthews is mm-hmm. is a non-starter. Yeah. But what player would make you say, I'm going to trade one of those kids for that guy? What defenseman?
I don't know. You would have to look at the dumpster fires, one being a team like Arizona, or you would have to look at a team like Calgary, possibly Carolina, that has the so-called some of the best young decors in the league, where there's just a lot of them.
Well, that's an interesting take, though. That's an interesting angle, because a lot of times people look at Doughty, Carlson. What about younger defensemen coming up that don't get talked about a lot? Like Carolina's a perfect example. Philly's got...
Carolina seems to have six of them in their lineup every
right.
night.
Like, let's say Philly calls right. up and is like, Ivan Provorov could be available.
Yeah, but see, in that case, I don't believe for a moment that they would.
The Leafs wouldn't make that deal, you don't think? Like, not straight up, but I mean...
You know,
like,
I'm not convinced that they would. Mm-hmm. I think they believe... I think the Leafs believe in having the three kids leading the way on offense, and that with Riley, Gardner, Zaitsev, and whatever else they can organically add without subtracting one of the big boys up front, that's how they're going to build this team.
Yeah, I can't blame them for that. That's a very good core.
That's the Shana plan.
And now,
could it change down the road? I suppose it could. Always could. But right now, in my mind, the Shana plan incorporates Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and a group of defensemen that might not have a true number one, but in their mind, they'd like to think they've got a couple of number twos, a couple of number threes, and a number four instead of the traditional 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, mm-hmm. and that they can build that defense by committee.
And looking at a team like Carolina, they probably would be, they're not going to move away. Like Slavin, to me, has really pushed up. A guy like Falk would be maybe a guy on the outside, and I don't know if that's
not enough value.
He's not a guy that would maybe put you over the top. Like he's a shooter. That's it. Like he's got a big shot from the back end, but I think he struggles a little bit in his own end. So
I'm not sure there's a defenseman on the Carolina Hurricanes as good as they are that the Leafs would say, yeah, we want him more than we want William Nylander or Mitch Marner. Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't blame them for that. I'm just saying.
So it kind of goes back to what the original point was: they're hard to find, mm-hmm. hard to find that type of player.
Well, that's a two-way street. It's hard to find a Mitch Marner and a William Nylander. Mm-hmm. You know, young dynamic players who make this kind of an impact this quickly.
I'll tell you what, it gives you an appreciation for the way that Tampa is constructed. Like that's pretty solid through and through. I mean, goaltender out every position. It's like that's.
Well, they also had
youth,
so much
veteran skill, talent. Like it's all.
But you're right. Those trades occasionally do happen. I mean, Sergachev for Drouin was a perfect example.
Kid for kid.
So it's not that it's impossible to happen. It's just you need a kind of a perfect storm.
All right, Bob.
Thanks, boys.
We'll see you Thursday. There's Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, joining us in studio every Tuesday and Thursday. Get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Wrap up a busy afternoon next. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Three games in the NHL tonight. I'm going to play all three. I'm taking Philly at home against Vancouver. I got Edmonton tonight paying 220.
Really?
Is that crazy? They've been bad, and they're in St. Louis, and St. Louis has been very good. They got to pick up a big win at some point. Arizona's winning in Toronto. Why can't Edmonton win in St. Louis?
Yeah.
You don't feel good about that bet. They're paying 220.
They do, and McDavid's got the flu, but he's playing tonight. I just read that.
Ooh, Jordan flu game for McDavid.
Yeah, it could be.
Chance at a legendary evening.
Pocket of Karl Malone and go down for the jumper.
Mm-hmm. This could be McDavid's flu game.
You think so?
If he goes legend tonight and this starts a new stretch and a whole new season for Edmonton.
Yeah, I think Edmonton will get dummied tonight, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, I got Dallas dummying Montreal. Although I hate Dallas, too. But I kind of like Ken Hitchcock.
I hate Dallas.
Hitchcock coming out, and he's like, I'm not playing games anymore. I'm going to tell you what kind of injuries we're dealing with. You guys see that today?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, until he...
Yeah, until they say some guy's got a sore shoulder, and somebody runs him through the boards.
Well, Petrangelo, too, is... I mean, this guy could be in the Norris conversation.
Oh, he is.
And they get deep into the playoffs, and he's... He's going to say, well, upper body injury, you know, game time decision if he goes
back.
Well,
Hitchcock might go back on it, but I don't believe that actually even happened.
I like transparency, and now that I'm on this side, I would love to know what's wrong with guys.
Yeah, the game's so soft now compared to the old days anyway. Like, we just talked about Wendell and that 5-minute video that's circulating Twitter, and it's the best. His punch on John Casey is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
It was like a cross-check punch.
He hit him so hard in the back of the head. Like, is that what Chaser did to you during those drills?
Sort of. He skated by. It was kind of a... That one, Wendell was... Wendell hit Casey from behind. Chaser kind of blindsided me. As he was skating by, he gave me a left hook.
Well, the best thing about that is you could tell Casey was like, oh, I'm a goalie. He's going to leave me alone. Watch this. I'm going to play a tough guy and push Wendell. And Wendell was like, all right.
Yeah, I'm just going to punch you in the back of the head.
I'll bet you he didn't even get a penalty. No one probably went and talked to him. Nothing.
It was very gritty.
I love Wendell. He really is the best.
Why did that video even circulate?
I don't know. They're just out there. Some guy put together a 5-minute highlight reel of Wendell beating the hell out of people. Throwdown 20, you can score 102. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Big news in Major League Baseball, we should point out. That Japanese player everyone's talking about.
Let me guess, Yankees.
No, Shohei Ohtani is his name, but he will be posted. So the club that owns his rights in Japan, there was some debate over whether or not Major League Baseball and the Players Association would work this out, work out the details. Would he actually be in the major leagues by 2018?
Right.
Really, all you need to know is, yes, he will. So at some point over the next month and a half, I presume, someone's going to sign him, and right, that kid's coming over, and Yankees will be in on it. Boston will be in on it.
All the big dogs.
The Giants. The Jays will claim to be on it, but who knows?
Just missed on them.
Just a bit outside.
Just on the outside. Yeah.
Almost
80,
had
by
them.
80 million.
Almost had them. Wow, we're putting in work here. We're really trying to move this team in the right direction. Just missed them.
We're going to be back tomorrow at 4.
With the plunger?
We'll chat then.